Welcome to a financial planning podcast with a down-to-earth vibe. Sasquatch listens while on his morning jog. This is Through the Pines. On this episode, we explore the financial subjects we should have learned in school. These are the topics that they should be teaching us. I mean, I'm sure math is important in history, but really these financial topics are what we use on the daily. So income taxes, filing tax returns, managing and understanding debt, allocating income and budgeting, basics of investing and compound interest, building those good habits, using financial advisors and investment firms, understanding inflation, building and maintaining good credit and entrepreneurship. We'll cover these topics on this episode of Through the Pines. Bringing into the discussion are our financial advisors from planwithbaxter.com. Rex Baxter. It's weird you got the same name.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look up Plan with Baxter, B-A-X-T-E-R, and Brandon Smith. That's Brandon with a Y. That's how you can tell us apart. So
it's the only way they look like twins.
And 20 years, but that's all right. So you are the 2022 and 2023 Forbes Best, or they are, Best in State Wealth Management Teams for Utah. Also the Advisor Hub, fastest growing advisors to watch under $1 billion. And the receivers of the Ameriprise Client Experience Award, which means they know what they are doing. Again, Baxter Smith and Associates, find them at planwithbaxter.com. Okay, so kicking off, why don't we learn these things in school, Rex? I mean,
that is a $1 million question,
right?
Since we're talking about finance, right? So some of these are brushed upon in school. It's not mandatory, but it's a elective course that you can take.
In college, not in high school.
In high school, it's an elective course now, in high school, that you can take. But it doesn't go very deep on hardly any of these subjects. And so I do think that they cover checking accounts, how to balance a checkbook. Mm. I think they cover basics of maybe a budget, possibly. They really don't go very deep in a lot of things. And so that's what we want to talk about today is how do we, you know, what subjects should be in there? And then let's all write a letter.
It works so well. Let's write letters. Okay, so we'll start with everyone's favorite, and that's income taxes. We earn a living and we make money and we have to pay taxes, but a lot of people don't know about how that works and that it actually comes out of your paycheck or if you are self-employed that you do need to pay taxes. In fact, I was talking to an adult so old that he was married, had kids, and went through a divorce. And he told me that his wife had managed all the money and filed all the taxes. And he had worked 2 or 3 years before he'd realized, this is after, that he hadn't been filing his tax returns each year. Shoot. And was getting these letters. And I'm like, well, oh, so he's like, I had no idea. Like, I didn't know because my wife had done all of this before. And I'm assuming before the wife was his parents probably, you know, and so they had just taken care of it and he just didn't even know that this was a thing. So what do we need to know, Rex, Brandon, about filing taxes, income taxes, all those? Well, income taxes first.
Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Go for it.
All right. Income taxes, you've got to pay them. It's one of those certainties, death and taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important, especially in high school, that you do understand the different kinds of taxes that are automatically going to be taken out of your check, how they're calculated, and how they change over time as your income goes up or down. I think in high school, a couple of key things that I think ought to be taught is, one, it's easy to download a 1040 tax statement, right, off of the IRS website. So you can download it, it's 2 pages, and then you have, I don't know how many umpteen pages of instructions that depend upon how complex it gets, that you can go through it. And actually in high school, I wish that they would say, hey, look, here is a mock person. Here's an 18-year-old or 20-year-old that's making $30,000 a year, which translates to X amount of dollars per hour, so that the high school kids can relate that to what they're making per hour right now, so they can realize it's not very far away, and then run through it and then look and see what, you know, the federal taxes are as far as federal income. If you're in a state with state income taxes, what the state income tax is that you're paying. In that example, I wish that they had, you know, a couple of capital gains and capital losses from different investments so that they had to balance that out both short-term and long-term and understand that as they went through it. And then a couple of deductions. deductions maybe for a retirement plan, deductions maybe for a charitable gift, a couple of deductions in there to understand how deductions impact your taxes and what you're paying in taxes is what I wish that they would go through in high school.
But they don't. And then a reminder, you've got federal, state, and what else?
Social Security and Medicare. Those are your main four taxes that you're going to be responsible for. And then you may have capital gains taxes on top of that, or you may have a gift tax on top of that possibly.
Yeah, the capital gains gift tax, that only comes into play if you've got like an investment account that's generating gains or some type of
financial account. These gains right here?
You know what I'm saying? For everybody listening, Brandon is flexing.
Those are very taxing.
They're 100%, yeah.
I think at a really high level, though, when you go to work, you're going to fill out your first day or whatever, you're going to fill out a W-4, and that's going to tell you what you want withheld. There's not a perfect way to know exactly how much tax you're going to owe because it's a progressive tax system, right? The first little bit is taxed a lower rate than the next little bit, and so on and so forth. And so you fill out this form, your payroll company or your employer is going to kind of estimate roughly what they think you're going to owe in federal tax and state tax. Social Security, Medicare, a little bit easier, right? Those are kind of come off. And then they're going to withhold taxes out of your check. And then when you file your tax return, that's kind of like the whole purpose of filing your tax return is to make those balance, right? And what's going to end up happening is you're going to either have withheld too little, meaning that you sent $1,000 to the federal government. They say, hey, you actually owe us $1,500 and you're going to owe them $500. Or they're going to say, hey, you owe us, your tax amount was $1,500, but you paid us $2,000. Here's $500 back. And so that's what a tax return is. And so the majority of whether you get money back on a tax return or not really comes down to what your withholding was. Did you withhold a lot of extra taxes or did you withhold too few taxes? And a lot of it, especially with the more basic tax returns, doesn't necessarily have to do with, do you have an accountant that got really creative and found some unique avenues? No, it's mostly how much did you earn? How much did you withhold? And then you netted the rest.
I wish that they would have an additional discussion surrounding tax return versus a tax payment that you have to make at the end of the year. And essentially what that is either you overpaid the government during the year, so they've had use of your money for an entire year, and then when you do your taxes in February, March, April, or an extended period of time.
This was a question I was going to ask you, Rex, because I had friends, this was their financial technique, right?
Yeah.
Was to just put down all these deductions so they would get a bigger return at the end of the year. Like that was like, they thought they were very smart doing that. Is that smart to do?
Normally, no. Because normally the government's had your money for the entire year and then you're asking for them to give it back to you, which they do. Sometimes it takes a little while, but but they do. Yeah. And so you get it back. But no, the reason I hedge and the reason that we go back to our age old saying of
it depends.
Yeah. Is because some people know themselves well enough.
Yeah.
That they're not saving enough throughout the year. And so it's kind of a forced savings plan, which is in my mind, a terrible way to think about that and a terrible way to do that. But if you know yourself well enough and you know that you're not saving enough and you're committed to saving that return and using it in that way, then that may be a more efficient way as opposed to not saving at all, right? Yeah. It's the best of the lesser evil, if you will.
Right. If a bank came to you and said, all right, if you're going to bank here, we're going to force you to give us $300 a month. And at the end of the year, we'll give you $3,600 back. Very few people would be like, sign me up. You know, this is a great, you know, and like, what's the interest? Oh, zero. Well, what, you know, like what's the perk, right? So there's really no benefit. However, like Greg said, a lot of people love it for that like boost of cash, right? Because they don't save and all of a sudden once a year they get this cash that, you know, where they could just do that savings if they had the discipline.
Well, the next part was filing tax returns, but as we sort of covered that, do it, make sure you file your tax returns, but they also don't teach you how to do that either in school.
Well, I think not only should they teach you kind of the process of how to file, but also understanding the difference between filing by April 15th, filing an extension, how long the extension goes, why people do that, and kind of get into that, those pieces a little bit too, so that they have an understanding behind as far as what the real deadlines are and what needs to be done do I need to file a form in order to get the extension? And is that a scary thing to do?
Yeah.
Is it not? Is it that big of a deal? You know, and so as a high schooler, you have no idea. Right?
You have no idea. And a lot of kids will start small businesses, small side hustles, like mowing lawns or something.
Right.
And so, or dog washing or whatever. And you can incorporate or become a limited liability or just self-employed. But then now you could file like a business filing. And when are those due? The same time and extensions on those. And they're all different.
They're different based on the business structure that you have. And so you need to understand when is, you know, self-employment. If you're a sole proprietor, that's the same as an individual as far as the tax deadlines. If you're an LLC, you know, or if you're a C corp or an S corp or these different corporations, then there may be different timeframes tied to those. And I think it is good to know those. I think it's also good to know that if you do have a small business that you're setting up in high school, that you have a good understanding of what are legitimate deductions, right? If you use your cell phone to book your lawn mowing appointments, then a certain portion of that cell phone bill can be written off possibly on your taxes. Keep in mind, I am not a CPA. This is my disclaimer. And so make sure you're checking with CPA.
Throwing out ideas here.
Yeah, just brainstorming here. Yeah.
You know. When you start owning a business, a lot more goes into it. But at its base level, right? If you're working, you're getting a W-2 income. At the end of the year, you're going to get a couple financial documents from the various entities, right, that you've worked with. If you got an investment account, you'll probably get like a 1099 from the investment account. If you, you know, have a W-2 job, you're going to get that W-2 at the end of the year. And essentially, you're going to compile all of those documents. All of those documents will have all of the inputs for your tax return. And so that's typically where you take those, you input those into either software, you take them to an accountant, and then they process that tax return, tell you how much you end up owing or receiving.
I wish that on the business side that they would incorporate that into an entrepreneurial class.
Yeah.
On the business side and keep the personal just on the personal. Mm-hmm. And then on each, I think there's additional components that would be really nice. And so on the entrepreneurial side, it'd be nice to have additional financial statements, such as a balance sheet for a business, a cash flow statement for a business, you know, accounts receivable aging for a business, and all these different pieces that go into maintaining a financially healthy business, so that not only are you doing your taxes correctly, but you're also setting yourself up that if you need financing or if you're going to sell your business at some point, that's the goal when you're done with high school, to sell your lawn mowing business, which you could do to make sure that you're setting that up so it's an easy sell and easy to measure as far as what that value is.
It's just like some grand conspiracy to not teach people about money in school, or is this just a massive oversight by our education system?
Oh, conspiracy.
Totally.
No.
100%.
I'm just kidding. I'm just joking.
Yeah, no, but why are they not doing, you know what I mean? Like, what?
I think that they feel like there's the other subjects are more important. And so I feel like that in the pecking order, right? You've got your 3 R's and your reading, writing, arithmetic. And how do you spell arithmetic? Well,
or writing. So,
or writing with, yeah. Already we got a problem here. Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's high school. So, you've got your science, your English classes, you've got, you know, all these other subjects. And then you've got your arts, and it should jump up that priority list. And I feel like more attention is being brought to it throughout the states. I know that now high school has a personal finance class. I just feel like it doesn't go far enough.
I mean, even in the arts, and we have a podcast that we produce here called the Ogden Arts and Adventure Show. And we talk a lot about that with artists, where it's like, how do you get grants? How do you get funding? How do you make money? How do you earn money as an artist? They all have to figure it out. There's no class to go to. And then, like, how do you pay the taxes, and how do you file your taxes, how do you get these deductions, how do you form an LLC? Like, we have no idea.
Yeah, I wish that they did a better job of, and this is not a knock on counselors, right, because both my parents are counselors, and I think that they are extremely overworked and extremely underpaid, so this is absolutely not a knock on there, but I wish that people would do a better job of trying to figure out where kids' interests truly lie, so that kids weren't feeling shy or reserved about saying, I want to be a Trumpist, for a living, right? Yeah. I want to go play in an orchestra and teach, you know.
I'm surprised how many kids actually know too that what they like, what they lean to, but they don't think of it as a monetary thing. They just think of what they want to do, right?
Right. But we should be able to, in high school, we should be able to take that and say, okay, that's great. During your high school career, here are four or five critical classes for you to understand. If you're going to go into the fine arts, you probably want an entrepreneurship class because you have to have some of that in you in order to build your brand, in order to kind of build out who that is. You want to understand business finances and business accounting. You want to understand fundraising and how you raise money for and how that is done for different arts and nonprofits and charities. And so I think you want to build out this curriculum to where you have a number of classes for each of those different career choices that are surrounded about money and finance.
Yeah.
Because it goes into all these careers, but there are absolutely little nuances that don't apply to everybody.
Right.
And you're going to miss that if it's just a generic personal finance class.
Yeah.
I will say though, and I couldn't agree more. I think that's really, really smart. However, things change. Like things change a lot.
They
and
do.
Really fast.
Continuing ed is important.
Right. And well, but that's the problem, right? Like if we're counting on high school to teach people how to file their tax returns, things are going to change, or whether they should be an S corp or a C corp or a sole proprietorship.
Totally.
Though the tax
a base change, level of knowing that these things are out there is what needs
would
to
be good.
Yeah.
But it's crazy how fast, I mean, with Secure Act 1.0, Secure Act 2.0, I mean, just all these,
and we'll talk about, that's why we use you guys,
but teach them how to learn. Right.
Yeah.
So things change. So where do you go to IRS.gov, right? And you go to this website and this is where you're getting it. When it changes, here's a quick link of typically where they put their changes so that you can get a quick, you know summary of it. You know what's
about that is that's so true because Brandon, you're right. And they change. And so what do? We Google it. And then we end up watching YouTube videos about it instead of maybe going directly to the source of, because we didn't even know where to go.
Right.
Well, and that's a problem, right? And so matter of fact, I ran across a situation yesterday where somebody was taking phenomenally bad internet advice. And so
what
it exists.
Hey now.
So it left them on a pretty bad tangent. So we're picking up the pieces now. And so I can't underscore the value of utilizing your professionals. The problem is that a lot of professionals aren't going to give a high school student a lot of time.
Right.
Because they're not profitable for the professional.
That's why stuff like this, base level stuff, should be probably be taught in school. Moving on to managing and understanding debt. And we've talked a lot about this in other podcasts. You can kind of go back to some of our podcasts that just specifically talk about debt. But just like we mentioned in teaching kids in our last podcast about debt, maybe the good and bad side of debt and the fact that debt's not all bad and debt's not all good. And what is it and how it works?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of having teachers tell kids what is good debt or bad debt, because I think you get into a little bit of overreach, right? But I think understanding and having them teach the pros and cons of different kinds of debt is fantastically important. Mm-hmm. Understanding, you know, variable interest rates that's tied to credit cards and what that variable interest rate is tied to, how quickly it goes up, how to read that, how to understand that, I think is very, very important versus a fixed interest rate like on a mortgage versus a variable interest rate on a home equity line. You know, I think all of those are extremely important on the debt side, in addition to understanding the compounding of interest that we've talked about before, understanding whether it's deductible interest or non-deductible interest on a tax statement based on what it's used for. Those kinds of things, I think, are extremely important, as well as healthy debt ratios, right? We've talked about ratios before. How much money should I be spending on a car? I mean, a lot of kids are buying cars in high school.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that I see them bothering their parents to buy them a $40,000, $50,000 vehicle. And sometimes the parents can't even afford that, but they're doing it anyway.
And healthy debt ratios would be great to know.
Yeah, I think so. Rules of thumb, I think, would be great to know. Hey, do we have a podcast on that?
I believe we do. Yes. Yeah. One of the greatest translations I've, as far as finance goes, that I just stick it, hit me hard when I learned it, and you probably know it, and I was like, oh, well, that's not good, is the translation of mortgage and what that word breaks down and means. And more is death and grip, you know, death grip. I thought, well, that's not good. but it's not, mortgages aren't all bad. You can have mortgages for good as well. But that definition of what it literally translates to, I thought, well, that is okay. If I knew that, that's a little heavy, you know.
If you knew a mortgage was a death grip,
for the rest of your life,
not a mortgage.
It just means that you should, you know, there's a reason it's called that, and it's because you owe somebody money for a long time,
right?
You know, and you're gonna have to be paying on that for a long time. So just make sure that you're prepared when you go into it.
But on the flip side of that, I was talking to someone who was, I don't want to say self-righteous, right? And this was forever ago, right? But he was like, I'm not going to have a mortgage. I was like, why?
Yeah.
And he said, well, I don't ever want to pay any interest. I said, okay, so tell me, so what's the plan, right? Well, I'm going to rent for X amount of years until I've saved up enough to just buy a house. And I remember saying, well, I mean, if morally you feel like that's the better thing to do, fine, right? Great. You know, live your life. But if it's for financial purposes, if you think you're going to be getting ahead financially, you're wrong. In fact, you're going to be much better to utilize and leverage debt, or likely much better to utilize that. Hindsight's 2020. Yes, he would have been to buy a house, you know, prior, especially to this housing run. But even if the housing hadn't spiked like it did, you're still better off. I mean, what's the difference between renting and a mortgage, right? There are some differences, but at the end of the day, if we're trying to get ahead financially and build wealth, sometimes utilizing low interest rate debt on an asset backed thing is a really good thing. And so, like Rex was saying, make sure we understand that not all debt is bad. And that also doesn't mean that all mortgages are good, right? We can't just say all mortgages are good debt, all car debt is bad, or whatever. It has to be within reason, within the ratios and everything else.
But I think kids should understand the difference between a mortgage and renting, and understand the costs that go with a mortgage. That you have to replace the furnace, right? Or a roof leak, or things like that, right? And you've got some upkeep, you've got property taxes, you've got homeowners insurance. And I think that they, in high school, I think they should understand that so that they're not scared of it.
Mm-hmm.
And also understand renting and how there's not any equity buildup, any asset buildup inside of renting. And so, you know, somebody that's afraid of interest, well, I mean, you could almost say that that's what renting is.
It's just
essentially you're just 100% interest.
Yeah, and you can, right? Write your interest, you can deduct your interest on a house,
right? Possibly. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think that's important for them to know, is can you or can't you, and what level can you or can't you. And so I think those are all part of this deeper dive in high school that we ought to be taking, and as parents that we ought to be encouraging our teachers and kids to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, you just got to point out, though, the irony of all of this is mortgages, like you said, are scary because now you own a house and you might have an unexpected expense come up. But on the same time, on the other hand, it's really nice that you have a set locked mortgage, that as inflation grows, as your income grows, as things change in the economy, that is set. And I don't have a landlord that comes to me and says, hey, Brandon, I've been looking at the property and I think I'm going to charge you this now, either pay it or get out. And that's true of a lot of things in finance, that, you know, investing in the stock market is scary because there can be some volatility. However, over the long run, it sure is a lot nicer than some of the other options. Understanding what the risk is helps us take more appropriate risk.
I think I just heard Sasquatch growl.
Yeah, they're moving some stuff out there. I don't know what's going on.
You know, I think the other thing that I see a lot is people that have done a good job of saving, but they're just keeping it in savings accounts, CDs, things like that. And so it's interesting how often I see somebody that's earning 2% on their money, as an example, and they're paying 6% on a car loan. And so this is above and beyond their emergency fund. But instead of going and paying off that car loan, that which is kind of a, if you look at it this way, is a guaranteed kind of, I should never say guarantee, but a 7% rate of return on your money if you pay that off, because you no longer have to pay that 7% interest.
Yeah.
As opposed to making 2% on, you know, on your money. And so right now we're in a little bit higher interest rate environment on cash that goes up and down. But I think that's something that people should be looking at regularly. And I think high schoolers should understand that is what is an efficient use of cash, right? How much emergency fund should I have?
Yeah.
And then above and beyond that, what should I be doing with it?
Well, that's the next bullet point here of the subjects that we should have learned in school, and that's allocating your income or budgeting. We spend 100% of what we make. Like what's the best way to do this? Or, I mean, and it depends on everybody, but if you could come up with like the one of the perfect scenarios or whatever, I guess, what would be a good suggestion on how to allocate your money in your budget?
Don't spend 110% of what you make.
Don't spend 101%
or 101.
Yeah.
I think it's important to realize that it's almost impossible to predict all of your expenses for the coming year.
Yeah.
Almost impossible. And in fact, tendency is to think that things are going to go a little bit better than they actually go financially. There's going to be extra expenses that come up. And so trying to keep the expenses down is one big thing, but then also setting up automatic savings, whether that be into a savings account that actually builds or into a retirement account. Because, man, savings are good for a couple of reasons. The first and obvious one is you start to build emergency fund and slush fund and some flexibility. But the other nice thing about being a regular saver is if something goes awry, you've got an instant 10, 20% raise that you could kick in if you needed to, right? If something goes south, you can stop saving and all of a sudden have an extra bit of income. Not that we should, right? We should try and avoid that. I would say with budgeting, sure, try and project it, try and understand it, but try and keep your expenses well beneath what your income is and afford yourself some extra room for saving and then start saving. Set that up and make it automatic.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. A lot of people, when they go through budgeting, they budget for perfection.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're using every dollar. Matter of fact, there's apps, I think, and programs that are saying, you know, use every dollar, and every dollar has a plan and every dollar has a purpose. And in philosophy, I agree with that. But in reality, you need, above and beyond even your emergency fund, sometimes you're going to have tires go out, or, you know, we cracked a windshield driving up here. And so, you know, I've got a $600 windshield that I need to replace, right? Mm-hmm. Was that in this month's budget? No, I did not plan on having a broken windshield this month. And so you need to make sure that you're comfortable being uncomfortable, that you're comfortable with unsuspected things. And I think in high school, as we go, and I keep tying this back, right? Because that's what our podcast's on, is trying to focus on what we should be learning in high school and in for our kids. But I think in high school, it's important for kids to understand that rarely do things go as planned, not only in life, but in finance especially. And so we want to make sure that we're planning for the unsuspected, that we're planning for those inconvenient things that happen in life. And I feel like a lot of times when we're going through the motions in budgeting in high school, it's, oh, I make, you know, $2,000 in the month, and this is how every single dollar is going to be used. And they don't throw them curveballs as to, okay, this happened this month, how do we cover it? Mm-hmm. Right? Do we dip into our emergency fund? Do we have a slush fund? Do we dip into our investments? Do we use credit? What do we do? Because all of a sudden somebody just moved my cheese, right? Somebody just screwed up my life and my tire blew out.
Yeah.
So
I think the most basic budget you two have mentioned over this time is pay yourself first. When you get money, pay yourself first, 10%.
Yep.
Would be a good start. Pay your bills second. And then the rest is sort of flex money to do what you need to do with, right?
Yeah. You know,
the basic budget.
Yeah, that's the basic budget. Pay yourself first, pay your bills, and then divvy up the rest of it. So,
and track and monitor the rest of it, right? Because it's going to ebb and flow. My wife and I, and it feels so much better when you can track it and predict it. And my wife and I, we spend more money June, July, and August. And it used to really, like, we'd be like, no, what are we doing? Why are we paying? But now we know. We just know June, July, August, we're going to spend more money, right? We're going to spend more on gas. We're going to spend more on, like, snacks for camping, whatever it is, right? Like, we understand that our expenses increase June, July, August. They also go up a little bit in, like, November, December, you know, with Christmas and things like that. So for us, I've just got an Excel spreadsheet actually right here. Right? And we'll watch the trends. And I watch my high water marks, because every month we peak out and get really high. And then every month we have a lower spot. And I want to watch those peaks, and I want to watch those troughs and watch the trends, right? Are we trending down? Are we trending flat? Are we trending up? And that helps me to really feel comfortable that, hey, I can pull up my bank app at any time and I mean, there's quite a fluctuation in where that bank account's going to be, but it's always within those trend lines. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, then we reassess, right? And we go back and what happened? Oh, it was this, this, and this. That makes sense. All right, we're going to be fine. Like, that was an anomaly. Or, hey, actually, our lifestyle is starting to get a little bit more than we want it to be. Let's see if we can kind of cut down a little bit. And that, for me, has been the best way to kind of live life, measure, check, recalculate, and then move on.
Do you, Brandon, do you take the balance of what you haven't spent each month and then reinvest that or put it in savings, or how do you do that?
So I've gotten automatic savings into my 401k, right? I've gotten automatic savings into my HSA plan, and then annually we'll just fund, you know, IRAs, right? So that's kind of the savings component. Everything else just goes into our bank account, yeah. And then I track it and I just watch. And
I was just wondering if, because how you were watching your peaks and troughs, if you found that at the end of the month you didn't spend as much, what you then do, you roll that money over or do you save it?
Oh, it just stays in the account. Yeah, it just builds in the account. Yeah. Yeah. And so I like to have a buffer, and I've got a comfort level. If I get below a certain dollar amount in the lower part of the troughs, I don't feel well.
He seriously breaks out in hives.
Yeah.
He doesn't break out in hives. But it does. It's emotionally difficult for me because I don't know why. Cause I'm like, it's nothing crazy is going to happen. Just drop it. Right. But like it really does get very uncomfortable, and we have to make those changes. But it's that level of discomfort that also stops us from going below that, because it's that level of discomfort that makes me say, okay, we got to change something so that we don't go lower and
our most expensive month is October.
Was wondering. So much Halloween.
I believe that. Oh. Was wondering.
No, I already knew.
I think it'd be really good in high school to figure out how to track that, how to graph it, and how to, you know, how often you should be reviewing it, mm-hmm. and kind of learning those lessons throughout high school. I think those are important. I think for us, we do. I have a base level that I like to keep in our checking account as well, and so at the end of the month, if I have more than that, I do move it over into a savings, mm-hmm. at the end of the period, and that way it's over there. And if I need to tap into that throughout the year for birthdays or for Halloween, then
Every Halloween. Yeah, so yeah. So Rex, what are the basics of investing that kids should be learning in high school? Like, what is a stock? What is a bond? What type of accounts are there? Like, what's the breadth of that kids should know in high school, college?
Yeah, I think in high school, I think there's a difference between high school and college as far as what you should be learning. So in high school, I think you should be learning what a stock is, what a mutual fund is, what a bond is, some of these jargon words, mm-hmm. what fixed income is, what equity is. So I think there ought to be a jargon section regarding investments and finance, mm-hmm. that goes through those definitions and how that works and how your money may compound at different rates based upon the risk that you're taking in those different types of investments.
Okay.
And how they tend to wax and wane during different economic cycles. I think those would be good things. I think different kinds of accounts and understanding the difference between a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA, and making it simple so that kids understand it. Most adults understand philosophically that the one is pre-tax and one is after-tax, right?
Right.
But they don't understand, most people, why we use one versus the other, and when to switch from using one, mm-hmm. versus the other. And I think that's an easy, simple thing to teach in high school, that it's pretty much just based on tax rates.
Yeah.
And so if we go through the taxes, then that helps us understand which types of retirement accounts we ought to be utilizing for what reasons.
Mm-hmm. And we have a full podcast on that as well, like when to make those changes. And so go back through the history of Through the Pines. You can find all this information.
Like we're building a little bit of a podcast library that people should check out.
I mean, for real though, if you really want to learn about, I mean, we take each one of these subjects and we go dive deep on them, which is important.
I think I saw 52. Actually, so you can listen to one a week.
One a week. There you go. That's pretty good. All year.
Sounds like a card deck.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to Vegas this weekend, by the way. Well, I'm going to blow all my money.
Saved up for it.
Yeah. Man.
I'd say, too, when you're younger, you've got to understand time frame, because everyone gets excited about investing and it's amazing what investments can do. What is your purpose with that money? Is this money that you're hoping to use in 3 years to go to college? Is it for a trade school? Is it for starting up a business? Is it for buying a home? If we've got a short time frame, can we really afford to invest it if the market might crash during that time period and leave you with half of what you invested? Because that's very possible. If you've got a longer time frame, like 5, 10, 15, 20 year retirement, then sure, we can invest it, right? And even if it crashes, we can ebb and flow with that. So understanding time frame and not getting too over our skis and as far as, hey, I want to put all my money in the stock market right away if we've got other big expenses that are going to make us more money in the short and intermediate terms. Mm-hmm. But then also getting into investing early, right? In our mid-20s, hopefully. It seems to be that those people that can do it start in their mid-20s, maybe early 20s, but usually about mid-20s seems to be a healthy time frame. I mean, that makes all the difference in the world. Even if all you're doing is saving 5-10% of a small income, it translates into just crazy, crazy amounts.
Yeah, I think in high school that kids ought to understand how to do those calculations on a calculator or on an internet.
Well, I mean, you can do it on your phone for sure, right?
Now, well, I mean the time value of money.
Yeah.
Right. That if I put away $50 a week, a month, whatever, for 30 years and I earn X percent, this is what it is. And the reverse of that, that if I have a, you know, a 5-year car loan and I take out $10,000 and it's 8%, then that $5,000 car just cost me $8,000 or whatever the math is on that. So that they're understanding what that interest amount is versus that they're making versus what they're paying. And I think that's an easy, fairly easy, simple thing to teach in high school classes. And I feel like they teach a piece of that at a fairly shallow level, but not deep enough for them to go in and kind of make that part of their decision-making process.
And you can tell when someone's had part of a lesson and not the holistic lesson, right? When you meet with a young family and they're like, we are doing 3 times our mortgage payment. And I'm like, well, what's your interest rate? 3%, but we're not going to pay a dollar more. And it's like, holy cow. Okay. Like, okay, maybe, but do you know how much more money you could have if we invest it and get 8%?
Well, we're going to talk about what this is why you should use a financial advisor, right? Because they can maybe help solve some of these. But are we introduced to financial advisors in high school? I don't know if we are.
So. No, but I think they ought to go through the different kinds of professionals.
Yeah.
And so that they understand, right?
Right.
What is an insurance agent and what are their kind of product mixes and what do they have? What is a financial advisor? What are their product mixes?
Yeah, what's a real estate agent?
Right. Real estate agent versus a real estate broker versus a mortgage broker versus title company, right? Yep. Those kind of basic pieces.
I didn't learn that until I was probably closer to 30 years old.
In the mortgage business.
In the mortgage business. That this is what they do for a living.
Yeah.
That you don't go to a bank, or you can, but you've got an option to go to a mortgage broker and
right.
do these things. And I had no idea this was a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. So yeah. I think... learning those things. It's a thing. Totally.
Then I became one for a while.
You did.
Yeah.
You did. And so I think also along with part of that class is how do you get a job in that area?
Yeah.
How do you become an insurance agent?
Yeah.
How do you become a financial advisor? How do you become an accountant or a CPA? What's the schooling? What's the process? Mm-hmm. What tests are you having to take? So that you can kind of think through that in high school as to, you know, what am I going to have to do in college? If I want to go down that path, or do I need college to go down that path?
Is it true, Rex, that financial advisors are all like chemistry flunkies?
Most. I'm just kidding. I don't know. There's some. I mean,
there's some math involved in the early stages.
It takes all types.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the interesting thing about financial advisors is one, it doesn't take a college degree. You don't have to have a college degree to be a financial advisor.
Didn't know that.
That is not required. You know, I know
some tests.
You do have to pass some tests, mm-hmm. right? You do have some tests that you have to pass, some security licenses,
including fingerprint like tests.
You do have to have a background check. That is true too. But, you know, there's a lot of psychology majors in finance. There's a lot of business majors. There's some science majors. There's some that have gone through entrepreneurial classes. There's some English majors that are in finance. I mean, it's all types. Mm. So.
Yeah, it worries me when people are like, what was your major in college? I'm like, finance. Like, oh, so you actually wanted, you trained for this. Like, yeah. what were you doing?
I don't know. Who have you been talking right. that hasn't been trained right. for this?
Well, yeah. I mean, so Brent, did you have some some more numbers.
You bet. You bet. This is kind of interesting. It's off of a FactSet, puts out a lot of different charts, and our chief economist and our Ameriprise research team puts together every day a little, I don't want to call it a spoof, but like a little, you know, analysis.
A little good to know.
Yeah. Good to know.
That's spoof.
And this is so this time they did a percentage of employment that is part-time and specifically part-time for economic benefit, right? That they needed extra cash. And so they went out and got a part-time job. And the reason this is measured is because sometimes we can look at in our employment numbers and the employment numbers look great, but it's a bunch of part-time jobs, right? We created how many jobs? Well, there are like three part-time jobs there. You know, people are working three part-time jobs.
Just do they count the same person twice? So if you have a regular job and two part-time jobs, does that say, oh, well, we have a lot of jobs right now out there?
Right. There's a lot of
one person's working three of them.
A lot of different metrics that are being tracked. Jobs created, unemployment rate would be different, right? People that don't have a job but are looking for a job. You've got underemployment, people who have a part-time job but really want a full-time job. So anyway, this part-time number is kind of interesting, and they have a chart. They show the percentage of people with these part-time jobs over time. And you can see, you know, 2004 through 2007 kind of hovered around that 3% range. 2008, no surprise, that jumps up to about 6.5% as we went through the Great Recession and, you know, people were struggling. And then that rate just very steadily comes down between about 2010 to about 2020. It was just a pretty steady decline right back down below 3%. Obviously, 2020, that spikes again, and then it's come right back down. And so we're sitting kind of below sub 3%. The last couple of years, it's come up maybe a quarter of a percent to a half percent. But overall, that looks pretty healthy. To have that few, that small of a percentage of part-time jobs is a good thing, that typically speaking.
So it's interesting because full employment used to be considered 5%.
Unemployment, yeah.
Right? Oh, really?
And we've been under 5% unemployment for a long time now. That is interesting. But some of those numbers, it depends on which numbers you're looking at. So it is important that you understand what numbers you're looking at and what ratios, because you have like non-farm payrolls that if you have two or three jobs.
And why do they leave the farms out?
Well, because you have so many temp employees coming in and working during different seasons that it can really fluctuate that number.
Okay.
Right. It can really skew it. And so that's why they try and take some of the seasonality out of certain industries as well. And so that's why people pay a little more attention to retail employment from about October through the end of the year. And then they go back to kind of to regular unemployment. So depending on the time of the year, different numbers can have different meanings. And so I think it's important that people understand that. But that would be good in an economics class in high school, right? Yeah. In an economics class, you should understand some of these, you know, what is GDP? What are these main economic ratios? What's our external trade? And some of these are covered in college. All of this is covered in college. And some of this is brushed upon in high school in an economics class, but I'm not sure that it goes from the point of just teaching the terms and teaching the basics to how does that impact me when I wake up tomorrow morning, right? How does that impact my life?
Well, speaking of things that impact your life, what about inflation and understanding inflation? Should that be taught in high school?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so for sure.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. In fact, more so when you're planning for retirement, it's easy to kind of be like, oh, like you do run just the straight numbers. You're like, man, $10,000 saved at 8.5%. That's going to give me $500,000. I'm set. I can live on $500,000. Right. But it's like, well, actually, when you count into inflation, right, that's going to cut in half or so, you know, or sometimes I see, and this is more retirees, they'll lock into a steady locked fixed income. They'll pay a bunch for this fixed income. They'll think, hey, this is great. I can live on this.
Like pay a bunch into a product for.
Right. Yeah. Right. And they don't realize, wow, if that rate doesn't increase for inflation, I'm going to have other issues unless I've planned ahead for that. And so, yeah, I think inflation is more important when you're projecting numbers out in the future, but it's also good to be aware of, you know, as a kid, and understand that when we're talking about inflation, we're talking about the rate of change. So, I mean, it's not like prices are, when people talk about inflation coming down, a lot of people are talking about now, that doesn't mean prices are coming back. It means the rate of increase is slowing down.
Yeah, I think inflation is extremely important to understand in high school. And I think not only for the long-term perspective, but I think also for the short term, because I think the two things that eat away at cash, right? We talk about cash is king. Matter of fact, I think we have a pod. Do we have
it's a podcast really called? Yeah.
And so I think as we think about that, the two things that eat away at cash are taxes and inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think it's important for high school kids to understand their real rate of return. They're in their pocket rate of return, which if you take out inflation and taxes on the interest that they're earning, I think it's important for them to understand, am I actually making progress in life, or am I actually going backwards because of how conservative I am with my money? And I think that that's an easy lesson to learn in high school.
That's a good point. But
I get one a year.
No, there's a but on
I'm
that.
I'm going to change that there's to a, one
no,
a podcast.
No, there's a but on that.
I love it.
Sometimes it's all right to go backwards, though.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times in those younger years, you need cash. Like, cash is so important. And you know what? Like, if we're using cash products in a bank, statistically speaking, we're probably going to be going backwards.
Doesn't change the fact that you have to understand.
But you should know it.
You should understand it and understand when it's okay, because you're saving for a short-term goal, or you're saving for something, or you're trying to make sure that you've got the slush, things like that, or it's part of your emergency fund, so that you understand why you're making that decision. Right. And I think that you can understand that in high school.
So you feel a little bit of the pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
Rex, what about credit? And we talked about this on, you know, how raising smart money kids and how they should understand credit. Is that something that should come from your parents' experience, or should they be teaching this in high school?
Oh, both. Every angle you can hit.
Fair enough. Yeah. So how deep should we go on teaching kids about credit?
I think when you go through a car wash, they just have all these credit lessons like beaming down into your car. So you have to learn. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just kidding. But I think it is important to understand credit. What is a credit score made of? What impacts it? Why does it go up or down? Why do we use credit? Why is it important or not important? And I don't want the teachers to tell people why it's important or not important, but I want them to be able to explain and help the kids understand, so they can make up their own mind as to where they're going to make up their decision on whether it's important or not important for different things in life.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned nothing about credit in school. Did you, Brandon?
I remember an assembly. They're like, all right, dude, this and this. It was like a 15-minute rundown of good and bad. And I just stuck with it.
Yeah, they brought in like a speaker, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, at least it was something, but yeah.
I remember like the first day of college, so just out of high school, and you go through like the walk of all the fraternities and sororities. Every third table was like a different credit card company the university's, college's bank and their credit. And it's like, oh my God, I literally think I picked up like four applications. I don't think I sent any of them in, but I think I picked them all up. I'm like, ooh, kid in the candy store, I get credit.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's true. They're after you when you're
absolutely they are.
All right. Last one. I feel like this is important and really under talked about in high school, and that is the power of entrepreneurship and business building versus so when I was growing up, we live next to this Air Force base, Hill Air Force Base, and I was encouraged to maybe get a job there because you have benefits that last a lifetime and this type of work that is very secure, and that can apply to, we also have a branch of the IRS here within our city, and that is a similar lifestyle where you can work a job and you get good benefits, good retirement, and this kind of thing, versus something else that would be considered risky, like owning your own business or something. And so, but I don't know if that's covered in high school and the differences between job choices and where that leads.
Yeah, I think in our local, very local economy here,
hyper local
in Ogden, Utah.
Yeah,
the biggest employers are the government, right? You've got Hill Air Force Base, as far as federal military, both civil service as well as federal government. You have the IRS at center that's based out of here. You've got a major university that's based out of here, and so when you look at government employees, essentially, we're a blue collar town, and that's why we're a blue collar town, because that is our primary employers. Now we have a lot of entrepreneurship that comes out of Ogden. We have, you know, a lot of other businesses and some manufacturing and things like that that come out of Ogden as well, which is fantastic to complement that. But I absolutely think that every hyper local economy, I think kids in those high schools should understand both what is prevalent in their own local economy and the benefits, the paths that exist there, as well as the other lesser known ones that may be opportunities for wherever they move to, or maybe opportunities for that they want to explore that aren't quite as prevalent. Because I think it's easy when you have that much, you know, government employment in one town, it's easy to just kind of fall into that. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, back in the day, if the steel mill was your primary employer in your town, that was kind of, you play high school football and you default to the steel mill, right? Yeah. That's what you would do. And I think it's important in high school to understand that there's a lot of different options and what financial pieces go with each. And so if you're going to work for the government, you probably have great benefits, probably lower pay, more likely than not, but great benefits. And so great retirement benefits, typically great health care benefits. You might not have as flexible of a schedule. You may not have quite as much earning potential.
You get every holiday off.
not every holiday, but you get get all U.S. holidays off.
Yeah, and you really have to know, and this is hard because you're in high school, your personality, and you don't really know what you like and not like as far as that goes, maybe until you're a little bit older. But because that can really, some people, we have friends and family that work in both the Hill, the base and IRS, and love their jobs and love their life. And there's some that just like, I could never do that. And I'm like, well, I can't do that. I have to have this. I just can't sit and do something that doesn't interest me on the daily. But you have to kind of know what that. So there's the financial side, but then there's also your personality and how you're successful personally.
Yeah, I think so. And I think some of these classes are better for late high school versus early high school.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think understanding there's pros and cons to each. And I've heard it explained very differently than that, right? Like people on both sides of it, right? Entrepreneurship versus like government job, where people are like, you've got to do this. If you're smart, you'll do this, and then you'll have a pension, and then you'll be taken care of.
That's what really screws kids up, I think, is when people, authority figures say, well, if you're smart, you would do this. Right. Oh boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about boy. Pressure.
Yeah.
Right. Because then, oh my gosh, am I not smart?
Right. Right. And I feel like that's tough because that's type of language was around growing up with me, where it was like, oh, well, if I'm self-employed, does that mean I'm not smart? Or does that mean that messes with your head?
Yeah. And I don't think it's a smart, non-smart issue.
I think
it's a preference.
Yes.
And I think understanding the good, the bad, the ugly of those different choices is what's important. I mean, I honestly feel like high school is a great time to learn and to begin the exploration of what you may want to do. I don't think high school necessarily is the time to make that choice for most kids. There's some that will make the choice of what they want to do in high school. Some that know, that have kind of made up their mind, but the vast majority haven't. But I think it's a great time to explore, to understand. And the best way to do that is to challenge them on their thinking, is to challenge them with playing kind of a devil's advocate of, oh, you think that you want to go into that career? Well, here's some of the good, the bad, and the ugly of that career. Have you thought about this career that counterbalances that, or kind of marries into that, that supports that career, but has different features? And it may be a sales career that supports medical or something like that, that maybe they haven't really explored or thought about.
I think an understanding that every job has difficult things too.
Oh yeah.
You see so many kids, especially, you know, I'm a millennial, right? And so often millennial, I mean, I watched just friends just change major after major after major, just bounce, bounce, bounce. I'm like, are you looking for like a perfect, you know, like why do we keep changing?
Oh, I'm going to be a YouTube mogul.
Sometimes you get behind this kind of stuff too. But understanding, right? Like there are pros and cons to every job. There's going to be hard things in every job. And maybe you find a job that's really, really easy and zero stress. But man, it's hard if you don't have money too. Like in life, and a true job shadow would be to follow someone around 24/7 for a year, you know, and see the highs and see the lows and see, you know, everything in between. And I think the more you can get acquainted with that in any particular industry, the more you can understand that life is hard, but it's also awesome. and choose, you know, choose which way you want to go, right? Yeah. There's not a right or wrong choice.
Well, there's probably some wrong ones, but they're
That's true. Thank you.
These are all things that we should be taught in school, from income taxes to entrepreneurship. Thank you, Rex, for being here today. Also, Brandon, both with planwithbaxter.com. Again, if you would like to reach out to Rex or Brandon, please visit planwithbaxter. That's B-A-X-T-E-R, planwithbaxter.com. Also, you can find us on Facebook at Through the Pines and on our Instagram at pines_podcast for more information. This has been Through the Pines, reminding you to use yesterday's dollars to finance tomorrow's dreams.
That's a wrap.
That was good.